Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. I hope you're having a great Saturday. We are going to definitely have a great Saturday for the next hour or so, because we are going to be doing another round of our pop culture panel, talking about everything that's going on in entertainment right now. While we can't go out and get a lot of entertainment ourselves here in town, there's still plenty to watch and read and view and listen to and consume, and we're going to talk about that with some of our favorite pop culture experts joining us on the show today. First of all, please welcome LaVon French. LaVon, welcome to Let's Go Pensacola.
Oh, thank you.
And back with us again, Steve Wise. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
We're going to talk about a lot of things throughout the course of the show today, but I wanted to start by recognizing that this would very normally be a very, very, very big weekend in pop culture. Normally, we would be in the heat of what most people just refer to as the San Diego Comic-Con, or as its official name is, Comic-Con International San Diego. Of course, you know, like most in-person gatherings, that's not happening this weekend, although they are doing an online version. They're doing Comic-Con at home. So if you are interested in partaking of any of that, you can, you know, go to San Diego Comic-Con website and you can just Google that. That's easy to find. And they've got all kinds of panels going on there. They've got a virtual exhibitor floor where you can go shop with your favorite vendors that are selling things there. They've got a virtual artist alley and all that kind of stuff. So they're trying to give you the Comic-Con experience at home. And they're not the only company that's tried this. A number of companies that are in the convention business are trying to do something like that while they can't have events. Although there have been a few events that have gone on too, like the Huntsville Comic-Con went on last week. All of us are either involved directly in the convention business working for Pensacon, as Steve and I do, or they're convention enthusiasts like LaVon. Are you guys taking part in any of this kind of, in any of these online Comic-Cons? We'll start with LaVon on that.
Actually, like, not right now, but there is something for San Diego Comic-Con that I think there's a panel with the cast from What We Do in the Shadows, which is my new favorite show. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you're not alone there.
Oh, my gosh. It is brilliant. I kind of want to see that because I think that's a brilliant cast, and I love that show.
Yeah, and the nice thing they're doing with this, too, is that while they have a schedule and the panel goes up live on a schedule like it would if you were at an event, these are all recorded. So on the downside, there's no interactivity, but on the upside, you don't necessarily have to be in that seat at that time. Once it goes up live, it's going to be up online for a while, and you don't necessarily have to check it out this weekend. You can go watch it later. So that'll be nice. It's nice that the programming is there to access, especially because if you've ever been to, I don't know if either of you have ever been to Comic-Con.
Have you ever been?
Steve, have you?
I was there in 2008.
Okay, and I was there in 2006, so it has only grown exponentially since then, but even then, it could be a challenge sometimes to get into a hall, because people will end up, and sometimes people will camp out for particular panels they want for some time, and you may not be able to get into that panel. Well, with this, you're not going to have that problem. Everybody that wants to see that panel is going to be able to see that panel. How about you, Steve? Have you checked out any of this programming? Are you interested in any of this kind of programming?
I haven't had a chance to yet, but I'm definitely going to be looking into this for San Diego, just to see how they do it, if nothing else. And because I'm familiar with the way that some others have run things. For instance, there was a show recently where, I don't know if San Diego is going to be doing anything like this, but where William Shatner was supposed to appear at the convention, but because it canceled, what they did was they had him do where people had to pay money to spend like a minute or 2 minutes or whatever the time limit was, doing a one-on-one chat with him. And so it gave them personal time, you know, literally FaceTime with him. And, it's kind of a cool thing. So, they still were able to recoup a little bit of the money that, they would have you know, been losing because of the, you know, lost ticket sales, but it still gave people that special moment with, you know, with a big star like Shatner.
And so, that's a little different too, because it's a little different than watching a tape panel, because you do still get that interactivity and get that moment. So that's nice.
And I know that they've been doing a lot of the panels have been a little bit different because they're more like Zoom webinars as opposed to bringing everybody out on stage together and they're all, you know, right there in front of the audience and getting that live interaction. But doing it on, you know, over the internet where each person is in their home and, you know, I don't know how involved it is with interaction with attendees. I know that they have that means to do that, you know, for people to submit questions and then to pull questions out and ask the panelists. So I'm very curious to see, you know, how exactly those are run.
Yeah, but there's nothing like that electricity of being in the room and being live, like you just said. We're going to take what we can get, and we're all, you know, doing the best we can and during this this pandemic. But there's nothing like being in the room where it happens, to quote Hamilton.
Yep, and also from the vendor's side, you know, they're taking a hit because, you know, when you're there, you have money in your pocket that's burning and you're wanting to buy stuff. And it's, you know, there's some excitement about actually going to an event and walking out with things. You know, anybody can buy things online, but, you know, but actually going there physically and walking around the vendor floor and seeing things, that's where, you know, I really feel bad for the vendors because, you know, they're losing out so much. So I really encourage people to check out their online vendor floor and, you know, support the vendors. You know, I mean, you have companies like Twink, for instance, that, you know, has their mystery boxes, and those are really cool to get. And, you know, so, you know, help support the vendors because they're really, really hurting in this time.
Well, and the thing about something like Comic-Con or these very, very large shows that sets them a little bit apart as far as the vendors go from other shows is they have these convention exclusives, and Comic-Con is kind of the granddaddy for this. So that's something that might inspire people to shop a little harder online like they would in person, because they know that this may be the only opportunity they have to get that one certain item. I know there was a San Diego exclusive Black Lightning Funko Pop, and it's the first Black Lightning Funko Pop that's been made, and a lot of people were trying to get their hands on that, and of course they went very, very quickly. Unfortunately, I didn't get to get one myself, and I would have liked to. I know our friend Tony Isabella, who comes and visits us for PensaCon every year, is the co-creator, and Funko was nice enough to send him two of them, so that's good, because he was worried that he was going to have to try to battle the crowds and try to get one. Do either of you, and we'll start with LaVon on this, do either of you kind of look for those exclusive things when you're going to a show like that?
Sometimes I can, because I was just going to mention, you know, we know Star Wars postponed. With Star Wars Celebration, they always have exclusive items like shirts, pins, all kinds of stuff, posters. And the last one I went to in 2017, there early in the morning, and I saw, you know, when they opened the convention up, I mean, it was just like this mad scramble for that area to get those exclusives. It was insane. But, you know, yeah, pick up something a little, you know, something special from the convention. I think I got a poster, and very nice to get that.
Yeah, I know a lot of the vendors are very dependent on these cons, mm-hmm. because that's how they make their living. And of course, with, you know, not having those to go to right now, these online sales are pretty much how they're trying to make a living and trying to get by. So just like the rest of us, if you can, support them. We do have to take a break here. We're coming up on a commercial break, but we're going to talk more about conventions and a lot more after the break. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 93 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. I am talking with our pop culture panel for this week. LaVon French and Steve Wise have joined us. And we've been talking about conventions and talked a little bit about, you know, how this weekend would have been the big San Diego Comic-Con. And, of course, like everything else that's happening right now in the world, it's not happening, at least not live and in person because of COVID-19. But we're looking, like, you know, very hopefully and very eagerly towards Pensacon 2021. Steve and I both work on Pensacon, and we had a great big guest announcement this week, and that music that we played there to start the segment should give you a little clue as to who we're talking about. We are bringing in Anthony Michael Hall, who you know from movies like The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles and Weird Science, National Lampoon's Vacation, and then, you know, went on to things like Edward Scissorhands and The Dead Zone, and it's just, you know, a great pop culture icon, and that's kind of what we do at Pensacon. We bring pop culture icons to Pensacola. I'd like to hear from each of you a little bit of why you are excited about Anthony Michael Hall. We'll start with Steve.
Well, he and I are the same age, and so I grew up literally all through my teen years watching him and seeing him in movies like Vacation, and then, of course, you know, he was on Saturday Night Live for a year with Robert Downey Jr., and Anthony Michael Hall was the youngest cast member, I think still holds that record, because he was 17 when he was on it that year. So he's always been a fan of, you know, someone that I've enjoyed watching, and just, you know, even up through, you know, as an adult, in shows like The Dead Zone, which I really like, I've enjoyed his acting, and I think he's just really cool, and looking forward to meeting him and seeing what he has to say during his panel.
And we're going to have a lot of opportunities for people to get to do some things outside of what we normally do with Pensacon with Anthony Michael Hall. I know he wants to do some special events, and we're talking about a film screening. We're talking about a Breakfast Club brunch, perhaps. So there's going to be some more announcements coming involving his appearance here in Pensacola, where there'll be some special additional things that people will get a chance to do. LaVon, how about you? Are you excited about Anthony Michael Hall coming to town?
Oh, absolutely. Two of my favorite 80s movies were 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club, and both those performances were awesome by him. And as Steve mentioned, the Dead Zone, that was a great show. You know,
it was, yeah.
And I do remember him on Saturday Night Live with Robert Downey Jr. I remember that very well.
He was with two of his film co-stars in the Saturday Night Live cast, because Randy Quaid was in that cast too, and they'd worked together in Vacation.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, people may not realize he made a bunch of movies with Robert Downey Jr., starting with Weird Science, which would have been concurrent with them both being on SNL, because that came out in 85 also, if I remember correctly. But then Out of Bounds and Johnny Be Good, you know, they were in a number of movies together. So,
And for anybody who's out there wondering, no, we're not bringing Robert Downey Jr. to Pensacon.
Yeah. we'll make a deal with you. If you can build us a convention facility that would accommodate the large crowds that we would attract for bringing in somebody like Robert Downey Jr., and if you're willing to pay his fee, we will gladly, you know, do the best that we can to bring Robert Downey Jr. to town. That's the dirty little secret that people don't understand. Well, why don't you just invite, you know, David Tennant, or why don't you just invite Mark Hamill? Well, there's a couple of reasons we don't do that. One is obviously money, because if we brought in somebody like that, our ticket prices would have to increase exponentially in order to pay them. And then above and beyond that, it's the facilities. You know, we do, as you may know, we take over a good portion of downtown, and that is ever growing, and we expect it to grow even further this year. But having the facilities to be able to handle the traffic flow that somebody like that would bring to Pensacola is a challenge. And it's not anything that anybody's doing wrong or anything like that. It's just that the facilities are what they are until someday we get new facilities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when that happens, you know, who knows? Maybe one day we will be as big as San Diego Comic-Con. We certainly, you know, aspire to that. And we want to bring people as good a time as we possibly can, you know. And I think we do a good job that. I hope, I'll throw it to LaVon, since she doesn't have any, you know, any income coming from Pensacon. What do you think?
No, I think I've always said that. I think Con is very good about touching every genre. It's not just you don't focus on just like Star Wars or Star Trek. It's a wide variety of guests. There's something for everyone, and I think you guys have done a great job bringing these guests in. I mean, I've enjoyed seeing them. I just walk around and feel like a stalker. I totally fangirl on some of these people, like Chris Sarandon. Oh my gosh, I love him, you know, from Fright Night, the original Fright Night. I mean, it's a great blend of guests, something for everyone.
Yeah, Chris Sarandon, also Prince Humperdinck from The Princess Bride, and of course the speaking voice of Jack Skellington in The Nightmare Before Christmas. So, yeah, he's an iconic guy. I didn't get a chance to meet him, unfortunately, when he was here. I hate that I didn't. I actually met everybody because we had a big Fright Night reunion that year, and I got to meet everybody that was here for Fright Night except him.
Oh no!
So, which was great, and I was happy to meet all of them. I think we even had the director here
Tom Holland, and he was great.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting point, Steve, because the past couple of years, I think we have tried to bring some directors in and shake things up a little bit in that regard. We had Mick Garris here in 2020, who is, director of a great many Stephen King adaptations, including the miniseries version of The Stand. And, he's directed a number of other things, and Mick was great. And as you're a director yourself, talk about what that kind of programming means to you.
Well, first off, we have the Short Film Festival that I'm very proud of. We've been able to bring films from all over the world that are science fiction, fantasy, horror, comic book, some documentaries, animated films. And so, that's kind of near and dear to my heart. And, that's been a very successful part of the programming. And people seem to really look forward to having the opportunity to see these films. But having someone like Mick Garris, who I have looked up to for many, many years, be coming out here, and Tom Holland also, who, he directed the original Child's Play, for instance.
Yeah, let's be clear, that Tom Holland and not Spider-Man Tom Holland.
which he has joked about. But to be able to meet filmmakers like that who I have either grown up with, watching, or, have come to appreciate in my adult years, that's meaningful to me personally. Now, obviously, we have to present things for the general public also. But Mick was able to bring his podcast Postmortem here and record it live in front of an audience, and then use that as one of his episodes, which was really cool. And of course, and he was able to interview David Warner, who is just an icon in a lot of films, but primarily certain horror films like The Omen. And it's just really neat for me to be able to meet some of my idols in that regard. Meeting celebrities is one thing, but meeting the people who create the films, that's another thing entirely.
I'm going to diverge for just a moment, because you mentioned Child's Play and mentioned that there was just the announcement this week there's a new Child's Play TV series, or Chucky TV series, perhaps,
Chucky,
to put that more accurately, because that's what I think they're going to call it, that's coming to Sci-Fi. And they've just announced the big news that Brad Dourif, the original voice of Chucky from all of the movies save for this past year's reboot, is coming back to voice Chucky. And this is taking place, I think, also in the original Child's Play continuity, which that reboot film that came out this year, or late last year, I guess it was, did not. So are you fans of that franchise? Are you looking forward to that?
Oh, I am. And what's really neat is we have the original creators of the show, like, David Kirshner and Don Mancini, they are coming back to be part of this series and to oversee it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do. And it's very similar to Ash vs. Evil Dead, that had the original filmmakers and the original cast members that came back and continued that storyline. The movie series has been hit and miss. Some of the movies have been really good, some of them not so great. But they've always had a sense of fun, and I'm curious to see how they're going to translate into a weekly series.
Are you a fan as well, LaVon?
Actually, sorry, no.
That's okay.
I know that's bad. I'm sorry. I'm on your show.
No, not everybody can be a fan of everything. There's only so much time to watch all of the 9 gazillion things that are out there, and it seems like it increases exponentially every single week. It seems like there's a new streaming service popping up every week.
Every day.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's only so much time to watch everything. So it's perfectly understandable that there may be things that you may not be a fan of or that you may just not have had time to check out.
It's kind of both. There really isn't enough time. There's a lot of things, you know, and I don't have any streaming services, and there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to catch up on. So I'll have to go visit a friend or something. Like, you know, everything that's on Disney Plus right now. I know, and I should be up on that. If you know what I mean.
No, I understand completely. I am not caught up on The Mandalorian either. So, and we will talk a little bit more about Star Wars a little later, but I want to get back to what Steve was saying about filmmaking, because Steve is himself an award-winning filmmaker, and I wanted to talk a little bit about what you're doing, Steve, with bringing programming about filmmaking to Pensacola beyond Pensacon with the Emerald Coast Filmmakers. You just had a screenwriting panel online this week. Talk a little bit about what that organization's doing.
Emerald Coast Filmmakers is a nonprofit. We have a committee of 5 people that are all filmmakers, and what we're trying to do is raise awareness and help people that are in the film community along the Emerald Coast. And this runs all the way from, like, you know, Panama Beach to Mobile. So, I mean, we're talking about a good stretch, and that's just Pensacola. But just basically trying to facilitate bringing more jobs in this area and getting people work, you know, and getting them training and trying to, you know, provide resources. So what we've been doing during the pandemic is doing a lot of online programming, if you will. We had an actors roundtable last month, and then the screenwriting panel, which we had several professionals that were involved, including a local filmmaker, Drew Hall, who's from Mobile, Pensacola area, and who has had films in the Pensacon Short Film Festival in the past. Jamie Hall was another guest who has written. Jamie Nash. Jamie Nash, who has written several films with Eduardo Sanchez, one of the directors from the Blair Witch Project. So, it's kind of a cool thing to be able to present to our local community professionals who can give them insight into the industry and perhaps help them with their own careers.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about, but we do have to take another break. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are talking with our pop culture panel this weekend, LaVon French and Steve Wise. And we just had some news break, actually, while we were in that last break, that another cancellation, unfortunately, for something people look forward to every year. Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios will not take place this year. Have either of you ever gotten a chance to check out Halloween Horror Nights? Steve, we'll start with you.
Well, I once had an office at Universal, and that was way back in the day when Halloween Horror Nights first started. So for this first several years, I would be able to just walk into the park from my office, and so I got to experience Halloween Horror Nights for free for a number of years, and I've made a point of going back as often as I could. When I lived in Orlando, I'd go every year. Now that I live a little further away, I've made it down there a few times over the last 10 years, but I don't go every year. But it is a little bit disappointing that this is the first time that they have not held it. I know that right after 9/11, which, you know, literally happened right as Halloween Horror Nights was beginning to happen that year. They still held the event, but they downplayed a lot of the blood and gore and the violent aspects of it, just for the sake of so people wouldn't get upset over things.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, Halloween Horror Nights is not like you hear Halloween, some people think, oh, okay, they're doing something Halloween weekend. No, it's a whole 2 months of special nighttime events at Universal Studios. They don't just, it's not just, oh, we've got a haunted house this weekend. It's a big major event that takes place for a couple of months.
Oh, they convert all their sound stages into really just really amazing haunted houses. And so they usually have like about 7 or 8 or so houses every year. And a lot of them are themed by major TV shows or movies like Stranger Things or Halloween. I know the first, kind of getting back to Mick Garris, the first few years they actually had the Psycho house up on the hill inside the theme park and in the motel there, because that was the set for Psycho 4 that Mick Garris directed. And, so they turned that into a Psycho haunted house. And so people could, walk through the motel. I mean, it was all empty in there, but they built, sets for the haunted house specifically. It's kind of amazing that they're canceling this year. But I have a feeling that a lot of it is financially driven and because of the cost of having to set up the haunted houses.
Yeah, I would imagine that, some bean counters at Universal did the math and decided we can't pack enough people in here to justify the cost of putting it on, so we'll bring it back.
Well, also the social distancing, because the whole idea of these haunted houses is you're getting as many people through this line continuously. They don't send small groups of people through. So they would have to rethink the way that they do things, and I see a lot of logistic problems with that.
Yeah. Lavon, have you had the chance to check out Halloween Horror Nights at all?
No, I haven't, but I know I have friends that have done it, and it's an amazing thing. And I'd always like to go because I love haunted houses, and to see something on that magnitude, I think would be a blast. But yeah, again, the whole social distancing thing, and it's just not possible, and which makes me wonder how they open the theme parks, period. I don't know. I'm sure they've, the Mouse and Universal have figured out a way to do it, but to me, I don't know. I'm one of those people that are a little wary about being in crowds right now. So,
yeah.
As we all are.
I wouldn't personally leap to head out there myself, but, if people want to and they think it's safe for themselves, then sure, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was kind of surprised to hear this announcement because Universal was actually, I think, the first or one of the first to reopen. They've been reopened since June. And Disney just reopened a week or two ago. But yeah. But Universal's been reopened since June. So I guess I felt like, well, they seem to think they know what they're doing. Didn't even cross my mind that they might cancel Halloween Horror Nights. But, there are other things that come into consideration that, you or I may not think of. And that's part of what goes into that decision. Speaking of something that was very closely associated with Halloween Horror Nights for a lot of years, they did used to have some kind of Bill and Ted haunted house or show or promotion for several years.
It was a show. It was a comedy stunt show that they did. And it was basically where they made fun of pop culture throughout the year. So anything that was really big within within pop culture from the past calendar year, they would lampoon, and of course they had actors that would perform as Bill and Ted, and they did that for years and years and years, to the point to where they were making fun of the fact that the audience didn't even know who Bill and Ted were anymore, because the current generation of kids did not grow up on that. So here they're coming to see the show that was beyond their, before they were even born, was when the movies came out. And so they got rid of it a couple of years ago. I was actually there for the final performance, and which, you know, the show kind of went through ups and downs. And for a couple of years there, it was the funniest thing going, and then it wasn't quite so funny, and then it got funny again. But it kind of like Saturday Night Live, actually. But yeah, so they decided that we're going to end it and do something else. And now we have a new Bill and Ted movie coming out.
Yeah, so here we are in 2020, where it would have made sense for them to bring Bill and Ted back with a new Bill and Ted movie coming out. But, of course, we're now also in the same situation with that. This was a film, Bill and Ted Face the Music, that was actually shot over in New Orleans and was expected to be a big box office release. People were really looking forward to it, and they decided this week that they're going to go ahead and go to premium video on demand with this. It will be available to theaters if they want it. The few theaters that are open, the drive-ins, and there are a few, you know, independent theaters that are open from coast to coast. They'll be able to exhibit this film if they want to, but they're going to go to premium video on demand. I am a bit bummed about this because I was really looking forward to this film. I'm a big Bill and Ted fan, and I saw the first two on the big screen, and I really wanted to see this one on the big screen too. And
yeah, me too.
I wish there was a way that I felt like that could happen here. You know, we do have you know, our friend Michael Silver, who runs the pop-up drive-in that does films out at the Pensacola Interstate Fairgrounds. I wonder if maybe he might be able to get the license to show it, or if that would be something that he'd be willing to do. I don't know. They haven't done any first run out there yet. So, but, you know, eagerly looking forward to this. And I've been kind of this whole time with this whole premium video on demand world that we've been in the last little bit, I haven't been able to break down and make myself spend $25 to stream a film at home, or $15 or whatever, you know, price point they've set on these. But I might have to break down and do it for this one. I didn't even do it for Scoob, and I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan. But how about you guys? LaVon, are you willing to spring to watch this movie for, if it means paying $25 to watch it at home?
I don't know. It's been a long time since I saw the original, and so I don't remember all that much about it. I love the two actors, though, of course. But I don't know. I have to think about it long and hard about that. If it comes with popcorn and all the stuff, then, you know, maybe.
How about you, Steve? Are you thinking about springing to watch this one?
Well, my thoughts on video on demand are a little bit conflicted, because as a filmmaker, I know that that's kind of the wave of the future, and especially for independent films, which in indie films just tend to not get theatrical releases, because over the last decade or so, or two decades really, you've had really more of the blockbuster mentality, and the studios have more and more become to where, well, we've got to put out this $250 million film and make $1 billion at the box office to get a profit on it. And so the small films kind of get shoved aside, and they end up on streaming services or on cable and or on video on demand. And so VOD is really the choice for new movies to actually make some money before they hit the streaming services or other markets. With us being in this situation with COVID right now, I know that, like, Trolls World Tour debuted on VOD and did really well, but that was a family film, so you can pay the $15 or whatever, and the entire family can sit around and watch it, whereas if you took the family to the movie theater, you'd be paying a whole lot more for that. So I'm not sure how Bill and Ted will play. I'm sure that particular movie will play just as well on your TV as it would in the big theater. I'm kind of a snob when it comes to, you know, theatrical films. I want to see them on the big screen. I want to see them in the best possible situation. But a movie like Bill and Ted, I kind of want to support. So I'm really thinking that, yes, I'll go ahead and pay for the video on demand if it's not available anywhere else locally to where I can see it, simply because I would like that film to do well, and so I want to try to chip in my part.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it, so I think I'm going to break down and spend
as
well.
I think it will do well. I don't know. I think it will.
Well, we do have to take another break, but we will be back with more folks. You are listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I met them in a swamp down in Dagobah, where it bubbles all the time like a giant carbonated soda. S-O-D-A, soda. I saw the little runt sitting there on a log. I asked him his name, and in a raspy voice he said, Yoda. Y-O-D-A, Yoda.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are having a great time with the pop culture panel, talking about everything that's going on in the world of pop culture right now with Steve Wise and LaVon French. And I got to play a little bit of Weird Al Yankovic if we're going to talk Star Wars, and I think that's what we're going to do in the next segment here. LaVon French, of course, is very involved in the Star Wars world as a member of both the Rebel Legion and the 501st Legion. They are the folks that you see at various events around Pensacola, and of course it's an international organization, so not just Pensacola but everywhere. But if you see stormtroopers and Jedi and such out at an event, it's most likely that it's LaVon and her crews that are doing that. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the Star Wars world, because we'll start with that there is another trilogy brewing out there, another film trilogy brewing out there, and one of the big announcements this week is that whole thing has been pushed back another year.
I just saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. So, LaVon, what do you know? What do you think? How do you feel about them pushing it back another year? Give me the Star Wars fan perspective.
Well, I should know a lot about this stuff, but it's like some of the new stuff that's being pushed. I'm actually okay with it, personally. I think for a while we were way too inundated with everything, all things Star Wars, and it kind of started burning people out on Star Wars. I'd rather see them push it and really work on the storyline and the characters and do a really nice job with it. Although I know The Mandalorian is really wonderful. As I said earlier, I haven't been able to watch it yet. I did like The Rise of Skywalker. I like the sequel trilogy. You know, you guys all know that. But, you know, I'm okay with that, you know, pushing it a little bit.
And of course, there's very little known about it. We don't know,
exactly
what time period this film's going to take place
in.
We don't know who's writing it, who's directing it, who's going to be in it. There's some rumors that at least the first film might be Taika Waititi directing it, which is very, very exciting.
Oh.
I'm a big fan of his. And, you mentioned earlier in the show about what we do in the shadows. He's a big part of that show and was a big part of the film that preceded that show, both starring in and directing it. So the idea of a Taika Waititi Star Wars is very, very exciting to me. Of course, he's also a very busy filmmaker. I know that he's got the next Thor movie lined up before that, and there's been a number of projects he's been attached to over the past year or two that it's getting to an almost Guillermo del Toro like quality of here's 20 projects that he's going to do if he ever gets to all of them. So in that regard, pushing Star Wars back a year may not be a big deal. Now, you mentioned The Mandalorian, which is of course the big series on Disney Plus. Good news there is that they've already filmed the second season of that, so there's no production delay in that. That will still come out on schedule and has been renewed for a third season as well. So we look forward to that. And Taika Waititi actually directed an episode or two of that also, if I'm not mistaken.
I was just going to mention that. I thought he had done an episode or two.
Yeah.
He directed the final episode of the first season, but he also contributed a voice to a character that was recurring.
Oh, that's right. He's the droid, isn't he?
Yes.
One of the ID ones?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the designation.
Which
not
number?
IG-88. That was the original one, but it was IG something else. I don't know.
IG.
Yeah, I still haven't had a chance to watch all of the series either. I think I've seen the first two episodes, and I keep meaning to get back to watch the rest of it. And of course, there's 9 million other things to watch. So it's, you know, what's new and shiny this moment. So it's interesting to me because we are in this period of where there's so much to watch and so much to see and so much to do. And yet that doesn't seem to stop people from obsessing about things that don't exist, that they want to exist, and that they will let clickbait rumor sites deceive them into believing exists. Because it seems like all anybody wanted to talk about for about a day and a half on social media was, oh, Donald Glover is going to do a Lando series for Disney Plus. There's no legitimate news source reporting this. And no matter how much you tell people that, they're like, well, I want it to happen. So, I mean, I think we'd all like it to happen, right? Is there anybody that doesn't want to see Donald Glover play Lando again? Steve, how do you feel?
Oh, I think he was wonderful in the role, and I would love to see him play that character again, much like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, which there's going to be a new series, apparently.
Yeah, that's beyond rumor. That's been confirmed.
No, that's been confirmed, but although it's still on hold because of COVID, but in fact, they even have a director, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and Deborah Chow, if I didn't misspeak her name, she directed some of The Mandalorian. She's going to be the sole director for the Obi-Wan TV show.
And I think they're doing that as like more of a mini series format also. So it's not even like The Mandalorian where it's like 8 or 10 episodes. I think it's going to be like 4 or 5 episodes, something like that.
Right. But with Lando Calrissian, it legitimately started with just some random website that threw it out there that, oh, this is happening. And then a ton of other
equally disreputable websites.
Legitimate. I'm sorry.
Equally disreputable websites.
Correct. Yeah. They start feeding on each other. And so the headlines are, that Donald Glover reportedly playing, it's reported by someone who just made it up.
Right.
So it's not even a real legitimate story. But these other websites can then just say, well, it's been reported.
Yeah.
Yes. But if you follow the links that they have, it all comes back to you a nothing, So, this is, the term fake news gets thrown around a lot, but this has been going on for a very long time, and it's something that really annoys me because the fan community gets really excited about things that sound really good and that excites them, and so they look at any scrap of news that might be a really cool project, they jump on it, whether it's Star Wars related or Batman or Star Trek or whatever, they're hungry for some really cool news, and unfortunately there's these clickbait websites out there that they make money off of lies.
Well,
they can make up anything, and as long as people are clicking on it because they see a headline that's really exciting, they make money off of advertising.
Well, and let's be fair, there have been times where the fan community has willed projects into existence. I mean, that's why it's why we have a Deadpool movie series. That's why HBO Max is sinking $30 million into letting Zack Snyder complete his version of Justice League. The fan campaigns can and do work, but most of them don't usually start as somebody just putting up stuff on a website in order to get clicks to make money. I mean, there was a little bit of Ryan Reynolds seeding the Deadpool thing with leaking some test footage, but that's about as close as anything's come. LaVon, talk about it from the fan perspective. Why do you think people just aren't satisfied with the Star Wars product that's out there? Do you think talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think so. I mean, we all know, we've all probably all had this discussion several times, how people just, the sequel trilogy to Star Wars brought out, I think, the worst in the fandom. It was very upsetting. I personally thought the films were brilliant. I watched Last Jedi again recently and just sat down and watched it. It's a wonderful film. I don't understand all the hate. I think it's like, I think people, you've got all these different generations that started watching Star Wars at a different time, and it's not the Star Wars that they wanted to see. I like how it's evolved. It should have evolved. The story shouldn't be the same old, same old. I mean, these characters aged. they've gone through all of these trials and tribulations. I thought it matured very well. And it's kind of like the kind of following the Harry Potter books and stuff. The books matured as the kids matured, and that's the way it should. It should progress that way. It shouldn't be the same old, same old. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that amazes me more than anything with this particular rumor and the way people have just sunk their teeth into it is that this would be a spinoff of a movie that was pretty roundly panned. It was considered a financial disappointment at the box office. You know, I liked the movie, but a lot of people
I thought it was great.
There were a lot of people that were very, very unhappy with Solo, and these seem to be the same people that are like, oh my God, this is happening, and I've already set my DVR for it. And that's already, you know, dated terminology because nobody's watching it on DVR. It would be on streaming. But, you know, what is it about the fandom that's like, everybody hates it while it's there, but then, you know, there does seem to be a little bit of a reappraisal of Solo going on in the fan community. But above and beyond that, why they're so hungry for something to spin off of something that they didn't like.
It didn't really receive very well. I thought Solo was a great movie. Aiden Ehrenreich, I didn't even think about Harrison Ford. I know that's weird. I thought he played that role very well. It was a fun movie. I came out smiling from that movie. I just thought it was really fun. I don't know. And you say a new appreciation for things. I think I've seen a new appreciation for the prequels. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I think that there is a reappraisal of the prequels going on. I think some of that is the original audience for them getting older now. You know, because they were made for a younger audience, and that audience loved them as kids, and now they're getting old enough to speak up for themselves. But,
well, it's all the different generations. I mean, Star Wars was made, you know, we all grew up with Star Wars, the originals, and then you had, you know, and I think Lucas even said it was for a different generation. It's bringing a different group of fans into the fandom. So they're all made for, and, you know, maybe you don't like it, you do like it, but it wasn't really made for, I mean, it was made for everyone. If that makes sense. I mean, it's storytelling. It's a myth. It's storytelling. It's supposed to be. I don't know what the words I'm looking for here. Sorry.
That's okay. Well, guys, I know we could talk Star Wars for all time, but unfortunately, we are out of time for this week. I want to thank you for both joining me today. Until next week, you're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.